different this time. Leo sat fussing at a loose thread in the sleeve on his useless arm. A year ago, he would have been pacing up and down, but pacing was another thing that wasn't worth the pain these days.
"Are you sure about this house?" he grumbled.
A fire crackled in the grate, and it was warm and welcoming, and Savine would never have permitted a detail that wasn't in the best taste, but you couldn't have called it a grand room.
"If I was not sure, we would not be here. It sends the right message."
"That we're of no account."
"That we are humble, responsible citizens who have put the excess of the past behind us and accepted that we are all equal."
Leo snorted. "Have you seen that bloody palace Celeste Dan Huygens having built, or that townhouse of Isha's? There are plenty of people still living well."
"They may come to regret it," said Savine. "How things look used to be the difference between success and failure. In these times, it might be the difference between life and death."
Leo frowned at that painting of his grandfather, Lord Marshal Croy, cramped now under a far lower ceiling.
"You always loved fine things,"
meaning he'd realized now they were gone how much he'd liked them.
"I loved fine things when they said the right things about me. Fine things say the wrong thing now, and we are that much closer to the Agreant. It's a shorter trip to the Assembly."
He knew he should have been grateful. Instead, he felt faintly nettled.
"I can walk." "I know, but it hurts you. Why walk further than you have to?"
"To prove that I can," he grunted, gripping the handle of his crutch. She floated over his annoyance, as usual, which, as usual, only annoyed him more.
"In any case, the other house is filled."
"Tenants?"
"Children."
"What?
Have you seen how many of them are homeless in the city?"
Honestly, he hadn't. He spent all his time out of doors, focused on staying upright.
"Gangs of them. Orphaned, abandoned, lacking the most basic necessities, forced to prey upon each other, to thieve, to sell themselves. Children starving on our streets."
Leo frowned over at her. She'd shed her shapeless nursing clothes now, and, despite a lack of jewels, looked mostly her sleek, sharp, ruthless old self. But then she'd serve up something like this.
"So the darling of the slums has opened an orphanage?"
Now she looked nettled, as if she hated thinking of herself as a philanthropist as much as he hated thinking of himself as a cripple.
"They just need a chance, and we can give them one.
Or at least appear to."
"Exactly."
"Well, I suppose you're right."
"I usually am," she said,
which was where these conversations generally ended up. The chair seemed to buzz under him, and a moment later there was a throbbing boom, ornaments rattling on the mantel. They'd made pathetic progress at demolishing the Agreant's mighty walls with hammer and pick, so the Assembly had voted to move into the modern age and try blowing them up with Gurkish fire. Gravel was routinely raining out of the sky for streets around as a result.
"Fucking idiots!"
he snarled at the window, grinding his crutch into the carpet. He felt Savine's hand on his shoulder, that calming touch, just the fingertips.
"All you need to do is apologize."
"I'm no bloody good at apologies." Wanting to shake her hand off, but somehow wanting it to stay both at once.
"Apologize badly, then."
"Why should I be the one saying sorry?" Though he knew exactly why.
"Because we need him."
Which was exactly why.
"And you were a fool to push him away in the first place. If it helps, tell yourself you're not apologizing for what you did, but for being a fool."
"I'm not sure that does help."
"Be charming. You can be charming when you want to be. You charmed me."
"Really? The way I remember it, you seduced me, fell pregnant, then talked me into a match." A hint of an exasperated sigh, and Savine took her hand away.
talk him into a match, then? That felt like a dangerous choice of words, somehow. Out in the hall, Leo heard an echoing knock on the door, felt an absurd surge of nerves. "Help me up." Savine dragged him out of his chair, none too gently, and he winced as he put his weight on his iron leg. He was right, he could walk, and she was right, it hurt. "I will be in the next room," said Savine, "if you get into difficulty."
"What can you do?"
"I'll think of something." And she shut the door behind her, leaving him alone. Leo stood, stump throbbing, blood thumping in his head. He could hear voices in the hall. He wondered what pose to strike, but when you've only one leg, and that's a poor one, and one arm, and that has to grip a crutch, you haven't many options. So when the door clattered open and Haroon showed in Leo's oldest friend, he was still standing lopsided in the middle of the carpet with a quivery smile on his face.
"Durant!"
Leo hadn't been ready for the rush of feeling. He could hardly breathe for it. He'd been stuck for months among traitors, thugs, and cowards, and the sight of that familiar, trustworthy face, as handsome as ever, was like a lamp in a pitch-black room. It felt as if a part of him that died at Stauffenbeck, the best part of him even, came suddenly to life again. What he wanted to do more than anything was lurch into Durand's arms and never let go of him. He was poised to do it. Then he saw the shock on his friend's face. His wide eyes flickered over the scars, the useless arm, the iron leg, and it dropped on Leo with the weight of the Agriant's falling walls how ruined he was since the last time they saw each other, how broken and disfigured, how utterly crippled. Leo turned away, might have hidden his scarred face behind his left hand if he could have pulled it from his jacket without help. His words crept out in a nervous croak.
"I can't tell you how glad I am you're here."
The shock had passed and Durand's jaw was angrily set.
"I'm here because Lady Finry ordered me to come, not because you asked me."
That sank into the silence between them. Leo swallowed. Not long ago, his pride would have made him stomp from the room. But his pride must have been in his leg, as it hardly seemed to bother him these days.
"How is she?"
"Worried. Desperately worried about you. But she doesn't let it show. She has to put Angland back together. I don't know what would have happened without her. She's a great leader."
Leo flinched.
"Far better than her son.
You'd have a hard time arguing otherwise."
He knew he couldn't deny it. Being in his mother's shadow used to feel unbearable. Now he saw how lucky he'd been to have her. He took a hard breath and drew himself up.
"I'm sorry, Durand. I'm very sorry for the way it all turned out. If you'd been with me at Stauffenbeck, things would have been... well..."
He frowned down at his leg, at his crutch.
"I was a fool."
Durand didn't break out the long-suffering smile he always used to find at Leo's latest recklessness. The only hint of warmth in his face were the spots of colour from the heat of the fire after the chill outside.
"You're right for once," he snapped. "You were a fool, a selfish fool, and one hell of a poor friend."
Leo blinked. He'd known he needed to apologise. He'd never supposed Durand might not accept it.
"I always thought you knew, deep down. Honestly, I always thought..."
He trailed off, hands opening and closing, frowning hard at the floor. Leo's mouth was very dry.
"Thought what?" "Who cares what I thought? I'm as big a fool as you are in my own way."
Leo took an awkward step towards him, his metal ankle squeaking. Wanted to reach out, comfort him, but he didn't have the limbs for it.
"You're about the cleverest man I know. At least my stupidity didn't get anyone killed."
Now Durand looked up again, and so bitterly Leo had to take that awkward step back. "Remember when there were 7 of us?" Leo was left frozen, his mouth slightly open. It was a long time since he'd thought of the happy brotherhood who'd gone to war with him, risked their lives for him. Most of his energy went into finding ways to do what used to be easy, the rest into twisting the future into a shape he could live with. "Ritter," said Durand, "Barnava, Jin, Antaup, Glaward, me and you." Each name was like a slap. Leo took another wobbling step back, and his stump twisted in the socket of his false leg, and the stab of pain made his knee buckle. His crutch clattered down, but he caught the arm of a chair, managed to sag into it.
"They chose to fight," he whispered. "They chose to follow you, and you led them to their deaths."
"I miss them," said Leo. "I miss them like my leg and my arm."
He missed them almost as much as he'd missed Durand, now that he thought about them.
"But I can't bring them back, any more than you can take back what you did in Sapani."
And that familiar image came up of Durand and Glaward pressed against each other, half naked on their knees, and Leo winced at the rush of painful excitement that always came with it, worse than ever with his old friend right in front of him. He looked even angrier now.
"Who says I want to take it back?" he snarled. "You wouldn't understand. You've never had to hide a thing in your life. You've always said and done whatever you pleased, however hurtful, however ignorant. You've been celebrated for it. How blunt, how manly. Well, it's a new world now, I hear. We all have to live with things we don't like."
"Oh, there's been a great change, it's true." Leo felt his own anger bubbling up, never far from the surface, and he slapped at his aching stump.
"I'm fucked, and the world's fucked, but there are still some things that..."
A rattle as the door opened and Savine swept in, smiling radiantly with a baby in the crook of each arm.
"Durand, thank the fates you're here. It's so good to see you again."
"Lady Savine."
"Citizeness Savine."
She leaned close to speak out of the side of her mouth.
"We are all equal, apparently."
Durand was staring at the two bundles.
"Ah, yes, these. This is Harrod, and this is Ardy. At least, I think that's the right way around."
She laughed, just as if there was no icy tension in the room at all.
"This is your father's dearest friend, Durand," she cooed at the babies. "Yes, it is. He's the brains of the business, and everything will be all right now, you'll see. Two of the little monsters, would you believe it?"
"I wouldn't,"
said Durand, still staring.
"And they're almost as unreasonable as their father. Shush, shush, come now."
One of them had started to wriggle and squeak. Leo couldn't be sure, but he wondered if Savine might have pinched it.
"Could you hold him, just for a moment?"
Without waiting for an answer, she dumped the other in Durand's arms.
"He's beautiful,"
whispered Durand, and as he stared down at little Harrod, a hint of that familiar smile touched his face.
"He takes after his mother in that regard," murmured Savine.
All she'd done was walk in with the children, put aside the past, those little bundles of innocent potential seemed to say, look to the future. As simply as that, the mood was changed. Leo had sworn never to let another chance slip by. He dragged himself up, set himself as best he could, hesitantly reached out and laid his hand on Durand's shoulder. He didn't shake it off.
"I'm sorry," said Leo. "I'm so sorry."
And he was, for the mistakes he'd made.
"I was a fool. I need you. We need you,"
murmured Savine, gripping Durand's other shoulder.
"The Union needs you. Rizenau's position gets weaker and weaker. No one loves him, no one fears him, no one respects him."
I read a news bill more savage about him than they used to be about the king, said Leo. One of Swarbrick's, no doubt, said Savine. Even he's turning on the chairman. Things are coming apart. Riots every day. Someone has to step into the gap.
Durin glanced at Leo's hand on his shoulder, then up into his face.
Or limp into it.
The time was Leo might have punched him for that, but now he smiled.
I was actually hoping you might carry me into it.
Durin looked back to Leo's son, sound asleep in his arms.
Things will have to be different this time. Of course, said Leo. No hot-headed folly.
I'm with you there, said Savine. And I want something for myself. Leo squeezed Durin's shoulder.
You deserve it.
One thing even my enemies will concede, said Savine. I always pay my debts.
We could begin with seats in the assembly.
Leo tickled his daughter under the chin and made her squirm.
For you and for Glarwood, then our success will be your success.
The side of Durin's face twitched as he set his jaw.
How do we begin?
The ground trembled. A moment later came the echoing rumble of another explosion.